This is the secret of the inner critic, that it has a purpose, and its purpose is to help us grow higher and higher if we understand it and use it in its proper way.
Hello, and welcome to Spiritually Hungry.
Welcome.
Very excited about our conversation today.
Yes, it's a very important topic.
We are almost at the end of the month of January, and...
Well, as our listeners have been listening to this, probably be in February.
Okay, Mike, as I was saying...
I don't have to be confused, like, oh my God, do I have the wrong date on the calendar?
But my point, without being mired in the details, is that I think usually when people come to the end of the first month of the new year we find ourselves in, we sort of look back at our list, right? Or even the ones in our heads of our goals, of our expectations of what we should have accomplished so far, the things that we said we were going to do, whether it's go to the gym or write the book, or even just, you know, be more mindful of my time or my thoughts or whatever. And then we look at this month and we're like, oh my God, I didn't actually move anywhere, or that other person is accelerating so much more quickly than I am. And so what we want to talk about is what I think stands in our way of our potential and our desires for ourselves, is that we are our own, except maybe for you, our own worst inner critic. And it's that negative voice, the insidious voice that we don't always pay attention to, but it's the loudest ones in our heads that's really running the show. And that's what keeps us far from the things that we want to really achieve.
Absolutely. I think that's why I think it's, I've heard this from so many people, and it's always surprising to me. You know, people might think it's, you know, the people who aren't successful. The reality is every successful person you know has this going on. And some are plagued with it more, some are plagued less, but I think, and that's why I'm so excited for today, because I think we can give over to our listeners a few both tools and some wisdom to be able to really transform this experience.
Yeah, I always get a little, I find these articles really interesting when I read about somebody who is supremely successful in their field, whatever that may be. And they talk about imposter syndrome, which many feel, right? It's like, oh my God, when are people going to find me out? Or they gave the Academy Award to the wrong person, or whatever the case may be. We have that, all of us, to some degree, as you said. So we've talked about this a lot. I think in any spirituality, it is a common thought that everything, every action begins with a thought. And we've talked about negative thoughts, and we're not usually aware of that voice and the repetition of those thoughts that occur. And I think that far too often people don't empower themselves enough to direct and redirect those thoughts into the way that we want them. We don't give ourselves as much power, right, in the ability to do that, that we actually have. And Kabbalah talks about this.
I don't mean to cut you off, but although
but I do you think always do.
Whenever you see something really important, I want to make sure that we...
That's when you can cut me off.
Thank you. I think the first thing for our listeners to know is that it's actually possible. And it's actually one of the reasons we live this life, to be able to transform those inner critic voices within us. And I would even say that unless we find the way to do that, we are unlikely to actually achieve the purpose for which our soul came into this world. So this topic isn't, this idea is not just a nice one or a good one, and, you know, it will relieve some of that internal angst that so many of us have, but it's actually an important process to go through to transform those inner negative thoughts into thoughts that actually push us forward in order to actually accomplish the purpose for which we came into this world.
And there is a reason, although having a negative thought seems like an epic waste of time, but there is a purpose for it, in that it gives us information about ourselves, and it's our responsibility then to change them, because the whole reason we're really here is to transform, grow, and elevate from how we came into the world to how we leave it. Just as a small seed, right, can contain something that can grow into an oak tree, right, but it has to be planted, it has to be nourished, so too the soul has the potential to become great. Now we have to use our imagination to see what that greatness looks like. I remember, you know, one of the examples that I think will help our listeners just to really pinpoint kind of where their headspace might be in relation to their own lives and themselves and the relationship to self, is that I remember for a number of years, I was in this, and this is, you know, comparison is a real part of this tricky problem because it's human nature to compare. And, you know, might say that person has advanced further. Why am I not there yet? And I remember for years, I thought I should have already written my first book, or I should have already done, you can fill in the blanks, right? And I was so hard on myself. I was my worst critic and judgmental to myself, by the way, which we can talk about judgment, because those who judge others harshly, it's because they're judging themselves harshly first and foremost. But I remember for years, I was just so hard on myself, and I didn't think that I had enough to offer or enough education or enough anything, right, to be able to do the things that I wanted to do. That was the designated reason, right, that I had given myself. And I believed it for a long time. And then I had a friend actually point this out to me. And then from there, it kind of was a tool that I used throughout my life. She said, just take perspective for a second and look at like the totality of the beauty of your whole life, right? You may not have done this thing that you should have done in your mind by this time in your life, but you've created a family, you've created a loving relationship, you have a life of purpose and happiness. Like, and I was able to take a step out of my inner critic self, right? And say, wait a second, let me just look at this from a different way. What am I missing? And you know what I was missing was everything. I was focused on the one thing, but that voice was on repeat all the time.
And you touched upon something which is so important. Again, I want to both underscore it and maybe add a little bit more to it. You know, as we prepare this podcast, I like to, you know, read as much as I can and look at so much of the other. And, you know, we live in a world where there is a lot of
information,
even wisdom to some extent. And one of the consistent themes when people speak about how to overcome the inner critic, it's usually about how do I just get rid of it? Right. And I think the beauty of
or even ignore it or distract myself with right, something else.
But I think one of the beauties of the wisdom of Kabbalah is that it helps us understand the reason behind things and therefore the purpose behind things. So it's important to know that the inner critic serves a very important purpose. It's not just, you know, a quirk of the human mind through evolution. There's actually a reason for it, and
well, you're speaking about how our brains are wired to compare, to notice things, to look at details.
Yes, why
for survival?
I'm saying separate from any evolutionary reasons it's come about. There's actually an important positive spiritual reason for which it exists. And I'd like to touch upon at least two of the purposes for which it exists, because I strongly believe that unless we understand it, understand its purpose, we won't be able to use it in its proper way. And just getting through it, meaning if I had a magic wand and I can make every single person's negative critic go away, that would not be good. So just, you know, sort of using self-help tools to have it not bother us, that's not the way to overcome it, because
I'm going to calm myself enough so none of the noise bothers me. That's not really, first of all, you're going to be fighting that your whole life.
Or even if I have tools to counteract it. So why is this inner voice, negative voice, which is not our voice, necessary? Two reasons that I like to speak about, as most things that are important and true, there's many, many other reasons. But first, there's a spiritual principle that whatever it is that we earn, whatever it is that we create, has to be earned, which means there has to be a payment. So if you're going to do something important in your life, and we all are, whether, like you said, whether it's even building a beautiful family, whether it's writing a book, whether it's having a conversation that is substantial, that is supportive of somebody else, that helps somebody else, there has to be a counter force that's going to stop that from happening. And often, the most powerful opponent to us accomplishing is that inner critic. But its purpose, again, is not to stop us. It's there to make us work a little bit harder and actually earn that good which we create, that blessing that we bring about. So the first reason why the inner critic is necessary, and we never want it to go away, we want to be able to overcome it so that we can actually earn that goodness, that blessing that we create.
So can you give a, let's do a practical example. Yeah. So a person has the belief that.
Yeah, like for instance, you and I, you know, we have the opportunity, I'm sure many of our listeners, to talk in front of crowds, in front of groups, even if it's a group of 100, 10, 1, right? And whenever, and I know our consciousness, we go into it, you know, I'd like to positively affect in some way. That's always what I think. I often share this when I, you know, whether I'm speaking to 5,000 people or to a group of 10 or a group of one, as long as there's one person from what I share that is life made a little bit better, I feel that I've succeeded. Because I don't do it, and this is another thing important to speak about, I try not to, and I really don't do what I do, you know, for people to like me or to people to think that I'm this, that, or the other thing, just because I really believe my soul needs to reveal this. So I'm about to give a talk to 100 people. My inner critic can say, you know, you're not ready, you're not prepared, you know, is what you're going to say actually going to have an influence? Whatever, you know, and all of our listeners can make up their own list of the
different... Somebody else can do it better than I can. Somebody else can do it
better, yeah. I don't feel inspired right now.
This isn't that original. Yeah, the list can be very long.
Exactly, very long. And then I go through, and then I don't try to push that thought away. I say, oh, I know what's happening now. I'm about to reveal light. I'm about to do something good, important. Of course, in order for me to earn the light in that action, I have to overcome. And my overcoming is saying, okay, I know you exist, you inner critic, and I'm going to go and do this even though you're trying to stop me. When you go through that process, the light that you reveal, the goodness that you create, is actually something you can hold on to. If you didn't go through that process of that challenge, you know, so we know people that their ego is so big that they never have this inner dialogue. The chances of them actually holding on to the light revealed, to the blessing created, is much, much less.
But also, it never feels great because then, you know, maybe they overprepare, they try to be perfect about it. You're not really actually, I think things are heard in a different way depending on where they come
also
from
true.
In a person. It reminds me of the Thomas Jefferson quote we just reread recently, right? Like, at least you're in the arena.
Oh, Theodore Roosevelt.
Theodore Roosevelt.
Yes.
Sorry, Theodore Roosevelt quote, where, and it's longer than this, and I'm gonna butcher it, but at least you're in the arena, right? Like you're there and you dare greatly. Some people never even try at all, and I think it's that.
Do you mind?
Yeah,
it's so great.
It's so beautiful.
I'm gonna bring it up on my phone.
And I think that process of being in the arena, you know, putting yourself out there, that struggle. There's such growth in that, right? There's such light in that because you're basically telling the ego, I'm not paying attention to you, right? I'm going to go and do this.
But I know why you're there, right? So I think it's so important. I know why you're there. You have a job to do. And
most people, though, listen to it and then
right,
they stop.
Also. And also think that it's themselves talking to themselves. It's not. It's this this opponent, we call it the opponent, but this force that has, and I appreciate, you know, so I salute you for doing your job. I'm going to overcome
so
you, though.
Are you saying, because I always looked at you where you don't, you never, like in all the years I've known you, had seemed to have an inner critic. But I think what I'm realizing for the first time in this moment is actually yours isn't as loud because you haven't helped it grow. Like you haven't given it attention all these years. I think that everybody has it. I think to some extent you're saying now, well, if I get up in a room and whatever you might be thinking, it's just something that you're not giving as much energy to,
right,
as so many other do. And that, because I'm thinking about my list, it's getting smaller every year, thank God. But I think it's because I'm not taking it as seriously as I always did my whole life.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. Or you take it actually seriously, but in its proper context, right?
So you're
saying,
but I understand.
I know you're not me, but you're doing your job. Good for you. Now I'm going to go do my job.
It's separate from you. It's not you.
Exactly.
That's the difference.
Exactly. And again, you understand its role. It has a role. It's a necessary role. And I'm going to go, thank you for doing your job. I'm going to go do my job and earn and hold on to the blessings that I create.
Hmm. Okay, so this is the Theodore Roosevelt quote. The man in the arena. It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again because there's no effort without error and shortcoming. But who does actually strive to do the deeds? Who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions? who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least he fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. I love this so much. That was April 23rd, 1910. It's so profound and so apropos. I mean, I think it's something to look at and read every day.
Yeah.
Who doesn't want to be in the arena when you understand that that's what it is?
And yeah, and I'd like, if I can add one more element to this, which I think is important, right? So to understand the inner critic, its role, its purpose. The Kabbalists explain that each one of us has a tremendous amount of light, wisdom that we're meant to bring into this world. And as a matter of fact, unfortunately, most people, even if they've done good and they've lived a good life, fail at actually revealing the totality of their greatness, of their light, of their wisdom. I was actually studying this earlier today, and this is one of the ideas that I find so powerful. This is about 1,000 years ago. There was a very beautiful, powerful sage. He was living in Saragossa, Spain, during the time of there was the Muslim conquest of Spain. And it was a very interesting time where Sufi mystics and Jewish mystics, the Kabbalists, had a lot of interaction. And many of his books are actually written in Arabic, because that was the people that he was around, and that was the way he manifested his work. Mm. His name is Bakhi ibn Pakuda. And he writes about a mystic who would spend half of his day teaching people. Mm. And the second half of his day, he would sit in a room all by himself and say, and it's more beautiful than its original, but basically saying, okay, soul, reveal to me your beauty. Meaning he would meditate upon the great light within him and just ask, reveal.
Yeah, I'm going to do that. He didn't study.
Because he said, and it's important to know, I have, and I ask every one of our listeners, you know, whether you do this for a half a day as he did every day, or meditate upon the fact that you have unbelievable light within you, unbelievable wisdom within you, and ask for it to be revealed. Ask for it to shine from inside of you. Back to the opponent. The opponent is necessary because, and this is, we know this in many ways and levels, that only when we're pushed do we actually go and reveal what is next, right? Nobody in life has ever accomplished greatly without opposition. Why? Because the pushing against is what forces your light to come out. The pushing against, the inner critic that's saying, oh, you shouldn't be doing this, you can't be doing this, and so on and so forth. It's not just that, oh, I overcome it, now I'm the same person that I was before I heard all these negative statements. I'm actually now more revealed. So I am more powerful. More of my light is actually shining. More of my soul is actually shining. More of my wisdom. So that,
because you're not accepting.
No, it's that process of fighting against or overcoming.
You're hearing all these negative things and you're saying, okay, great. And you walk past it or through it and you're just, this is not touching me. And so you're saying that process in and of itself is what allows for greatness to be revealed.
A little bit more. So you are not, so hopefully you're not the same person after having overcome the inner critic, but you actually, more of yourself, more of your light is shining,
more of your soul is shining. I love that. But by the way, that's exactly like what we just read, the man in the arena, right? When I think if any of our listeners look back to a time in their life where they had to, there's something really difficult that they wanted to achieve, but they were terrified or they had this loud critic or opposition. And once you do it, of course, after you feel great. But I think most people think, well, yeah, because I achieved something that scared me. But what you're saying, really, which is really profound, you are now stepping more into your greatness.
Exactly. Exactly. It's really important, because then again, I find this very inspiring, because then you realize again, thank you. Thank you, inner critic. Thank you, this voice that isn't mine, but is there for a purpose. And you've done your job. I've done my job. Now I am more of who I am meant to be. Mm-hmm. And if you're not having that inner dialogue and overcoming that inner critic, you know, you're not becoming who you're meant to become. And I think this thought is so important, right? The fact that as I sit here today, and you know, as I've done good things in my life. I've written, I think, some good books, and I've been given some good lectures. But I know, and I am waiting, I'm so excited for even more of me to be revealed. And I know that that's going to happen either by internal or external forces pushing against me, trying to stop me. And then I reveal more of myself.
Yeah, it's like that example of, you know, the slab of clay, and it's the person's hands and thoughts and actions that mold this clay, right? It's just, it's unmet potential. And basically, we really have to remind ourselves that that's what our souls are. They're unmet potential. And only thing that actualizes it is the form that it takes based on all of that opposition.
Absolutely. I actually saw something today, which is kind of silly, but maybe inspiring, about a man whose donkey fell into a well. And
oh, I love this one.
You know this one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So sure. Tell it.
No, I've written about it.
Well, maybe we'll tell two.
Yeah, the donkey falls into a well, or no, in my story, it's a hole. Dirt.
And like, mine too. I was just embellishing the story.
Well, it's not going to work if it's a well, because maybe it's not the same story, but the donkey falls into this big hole and he can't get out. And he's crying this, that, and all the neighbors come around, and the owner's like, I don't know how I'm gonna get my donkey. They're like, you know what? He's just gonna die. You can't save him. You should just bury him, which is just like an inhumane story. So the owner is like, after like hours, he can't get this donkey. He's like, fine, I'm gonna bury him. So he gets a shovel and he starts to throw dirt onto the donkey. What the donkey then does, he doesn't give up and say, oh my God, the whole neighborhood hates me. My owner hates me. Everybody wants me to die, which is what most of us would respond to in that case and be hurt. And how could they try to bury me? What this, I guess, smart donkey does is that every time the dirt is thrown in, he steps upon it.
Right, and he shakes it off.
And now he's a little bit higher out of the hole, because the more that the owner puts the dirt on to bury him, in fact, he's using that to propel him forward and out, and eventually he gets free, and I hope he runs off. This is where I write the rest of the story. He runs off away from this owner and lives happily ever after somewhere else.
Right. So rather than being buried by the challenge, he actually saves his life. And I think this is the secret of the inner critic, that it has a purpose, and its purpose is to help us grow higher and higher if we understand it and use it in its proper way.
So I want to just talk about one more thing, because I think that we talk about soul a lot. What I love about Kabbalah is it just unpacks every kind of ism or concept to the 100th degree. And it talks about four levels of soul. And I think it's important to share this, because each part of our soul, well, the four that I'm going to talk about, are responsible for different parts of our being. And we have a responsibility, really. And I think that we don't look at ourselves in this way. So the lowest is called nefesh, which means living being. And that's the power that enables us to take action. So every time we move, we're taking a spark of our light, of our nefesh, and revealing that into the world through action, right? Because that's the other thing. I think Kabbalah is so romantic in the way that it's written.
I love the way when you speak Hebrew, by the way.
Wait, was that a dig?
No, it's not a dig at all. I just love it. I love hearing it.
Okie dokie, Smokey. So I just don't think that we look at ourselves in that way, in our souls and how they are manifested. So the second level is called Ruach, spirit. This force makes speech possible and lends words their power. So when we speak positively or negatively, we're taking that light that's within ourselves and we're either putting it in one bucket or a different one. So each action we do, each word we say, right, it's actually affecting our soul, and it's taking the light of our soul and it's planting seeds in different places. The third level is called neshama, which is soul, which relates to our less complex everyday thoughts. So every time we think, we take a spark from the level of neshama and we make it manifest in the world. And the fourth level is called chaya, which is life, which is the higher level of thinking. So it's like contemplative thoughts, meditative thoughts, mantras, critical thinking, etc. This is the part that I really love, though. Every thought has a precursor. And this is from the book Formation. Abraham wrote about this. You're like giving me really weird looks.
No, I love
that. Before every thought, there is a hirhur, a pre-thought. So those thoughts, which I think are really interesting, those are the fleeting thoughts that we have hundreds of every day. And most people aren't paying attention to these thoughts because they're fleeting. They're usually unimportant, but they're the most repetitive ones that we have. They're all always coming and going. And then what happens, though, is that these thoughts end up becoming the stronger thoughts. So they're fleeting at first, but with repetition, they become our belief systems. So these kinds of fleeting thoughts that most people have throughout the day is like, I never get what I want. I feel fat. I hate that person. I'm so ashamed. How could he, she do that to me? Why is this happening? I don't deserve this. And when we leave these thoughts alone, then they become judgments. Like, her house is a pigsty, or he loves the sound of his own voice, or I can't stand the way that person talks to people, right? They become these belief systems and even more judgments. So even though pre-thoughts seem harmless at first, they become our source of self-doubt because now it's our belief system. So it's so important to pay attention to where we allow our soul and our light to manifest. So to your example, if you want to go and speak in front of 1,000 people, or you want to go and help one person, because we all have that nature within ourselves, even people who are more selfish, right? Everybody has that, good and bad. And that desire, you have to understand, when you start to use your light into the parts that are helping people in that way, ignoring all of those negative thoughts, then you're planting the seeds, that light, instead of growing the opposite.
Absolutely. And I think it's very important. I think we often, as you said, carelessly allow, whether it's, you know, those pre-thoughts, thoughts, even words and actions, not understanding that we are actually manifesting our soul as we go about life. And like you said, if you manifest them and use them in positive ways, then they actually continue shining to you and give you new strength. And if you plant them or use your pre-thoughts, thoughts, words, or actions in ways that are not positive, it actually causes a level of death, a level of diminishment of your life force.
I mean, think about that slab of clay again, right? So if you think about soul in this way, so I acted in this way, was it positive or negative? That's now shaped the clay in some way, right? And then imagine somebody who's just doing positive actions for the most part. What would that clay look like? And I love the visual, because you're going to be like, oh, I don't want this maimed, like dilapidated thing. But that's really what we allow our soul to be placed in. It's not who we are, of course, but it's how we manifest ourselves.
Absolutely. No, very important. Very important. So I hope that from today, both Monica and myself and our listeners have found some wisdom and tools to really be able to overcome our inner critic. And what excites me when we share this type of wisdom is that for every one of our listeners that actually takes these tools and wisdom and starts using them, there's actually going to be more light in the world revealed. So it's very exciting. Something else you wanted to say? So this is a good time to remind our listeners to go to Apple Podcasts, write 5-star reviews, share this podcast with everybody you know, so that the light that we are endeavoring to reveal through you becomes revealed to more and more people. Share this podcast with everybody you know, friends, family, certainly those of you know that are struggling with the inner critic. As always, make sure to send your comments, stories, topic ideas to Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. Monica and Michael at spirituallyhungry.life. And as always, we hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast as much as we enjoyed recording it.
Stay spiritually hungry.